Hi, and welcome to the Everyone Funding Startups podcast. This week I'm your host, Paul Higgins, and I'm joined by Joe Abraham, author of the book Entrepreneurial DNA. Joe has started up, grown, and exited three companies and has invested in over 20 startups. And he's also a keynote speaker on topics related to entrepreneurship, entrepreneurial behavior, and free enterprise. Joe, great to have you with us this week. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks, Paul. Excited to be here.
So what made you start thinking about entrepreneurial DNA and what kind of, what made you, you know, start putting this book together?
You know, in 2005, I had started up an incubator here in Chicago where, you know, entrepreneurs would come to us either with their early stage company or their high growth phase of their business, and we'd just team up with them and help them accelerate. And it was at that time that this frustration started to grow because strategy that worked for one entrepreneur wasn't working for the next. And that led me on kind of a search because I already always assumed that all entrepreneurs were kind of the same, even though intuitively I knew that wasn't true. But there certainly was this one-size-fits-all approach to everything in entrepreneurship. So after looking around, hoping that there was a better framework, then I went on this study, just started asking entrepreneurs around me, hey, what makes you, what are the things you like about your business? What are the things that energize you about your business? What are some of the things that drain you? Where do you feel your strengths are? Just in asking those initial questions, that inspired me to go on a more deeper search because the answers coming back were very, very different. The way entrepreneurs were measuring success, the way they were, the reason they were starting their businesses, the issues they were running into. And so based on just that initial feedback, went on about a three-year study, had about 1,000 entrepreneurs go through the process. And that's during that time we had the big aha and discovered that really all entrepreneurs aren't the same. We really come in different breeds, just like dogs do.
So you said you spoke to sort of something like 1,000 entrepreneurs. What kind of what range of people were they? Were they US based? Were they all over the world? And who were you kind of talking to?
I would say about 80% of them were US based, just because it worked out proximity wise. Mm-hmm. But the other 20% were from around the world. At that time, in the accelerator, we were working with a couple of UK companies. A couple companies out of Southeast Asia. So there were really two parts to the research. One was just online surveys. So for that, we had a pretty wide net across the world of people just answering questions about themselves and their behavior. But the more intensive part of the research was actually me spending time with the entrepreneurs, either over the phone or Skype or in some cases working with them in their business. And that's where I would say 80% of them were U.S.-based, about 20% of them were Europe and Asia.
Mm, okay. And who are you kind of, who did you have in mind for as an audience for this book? I mean, who is it primarily for, and what kind of problems are you trying to solve with this book?
This current version of the book that's out in the marketplace, is definitely targeted to someone who's already a business owner, mm-hmm. Someone who's launched their business in some capacity. That's who I'm talking to, and that's who I'm laying out strategy for. In follow-up pieces and other areas and on our website, I start talking to people who are thinking about starting a business or kind of in that searching phase. But this one's definitely targeted to the business owner today.
Okay, and so you're trying to help them understand, their kind of the way they're wired, the way they're, the way they're kind of built for the entrepreneurship world. Is that right? What kind of problems are you trying to kind of get at with this book?
Yeah, the main problem I wanted to solve was the problem that I think every entrepreneur who's been out there can resonate with, and that is you go out in the marketplace, you put a business plan or whatever strategy together, and you start to deploy it, and some things work and some things don't work. And so then you start asking around or looking around and reading blogs or attending workshops or hiring consultants, and everyone's got their best, here's your 10-step plan to social mm-hmm. media and your 15-step process to raising capital. And every entrepreneur has been in the frustrating situation of seeing a strategy work for somebody else, follow that plan with the best of intent, only to have it not work for them. Mm. And in many cases, there's really no explanation for that. There's really no rhyme or reason for that. And we've found that entrepreneurial DNA, how you and I are wired, is what impacts that. Because some of us are wired to just build very small, stable, lifestyle-like businesses, and that's where our passion is, and that's what we enjoy, and that's how we measure success. And others are not satisfied till it's a billion-dollar enterprise. but also have the capacity to build a billion-dollar enterprise. There's an approach to business modeling that allows some people to build billion-dollar companies while others dream of it but don't have the capacity to actually execute it. That's where it comes back to entrepreneurial DNA.
It's kind of, I suppose, in a way, going against a lot of the intuition that we might have. You know, we were always, you know, looking for, you know, say, biographies of Steve Jobs, for example, or autobiographies by Richard Branson, or, you know, all these kind of these entrepreneurs that have done, you know, great things in the world and that we hold up as great examples of entrepreneurs. And, you know, we naturally look for patterns in what they've done and we try and apply the same lessons. And so you're coming at it from the point of view that, you know, things that have worked for those kind of people might not necessarily be right for us as entrepreneurs.
Yeah, that's very true. But within the couple of examples you even gave, there's some good news for entrepreneurs out there. And that is that Sir Richard Branson and Steve Jobs are completely different entrepreneurial DNAs. They both became fantastically successful, just like Bill Gates did, or Donald Trump did. But the four names there, Bill Gates, Donald Trump, Sir Richard Branson, and Steve Jobs, represent the four different entrepreneurial DNAs. So in other words, there's an opportunity for every entrepreneur to be successful, achieve their dreams. It's just that when Steve Jobs tries to do what Richard Branson did, it doesn't work well. Sir Richard Branson has what we call opportunist DNA, which is the kind of like a beagle to sniff out the next big money making opportunity, not only see it but deploy it. He has what we call opportunist builder DNA. So the opportunist in him is always looking for the next big thing. The builder in him has the capacity to turn it into a scalable business. Hence, you know, Virgin Music and Virgin Mobile and Virgin, let's fly to the outer space. Mm. And not only the desire to do it, but the capacity to do it as well. Whereas if you look at a Bill Gates, who picked one industry and has stayed in that industry for a lifetime, that's more that specialist DNA. He's just gone deeper and deeper into his expertise in the IT industry. He has no interest in 17 different things in completely unrelated industries. And so within that, so when we look at our rockstar CEO examples, we see that not every entrepreneur is the same. They can still get to success, but when they try and copy each other, that's when the trouble happens. And that's what we found in the accelerator, is that when we would take a quote-unquote Bill Gates game plan and try and hand it to a Richard Branson, the Richard Branson in our accelerator, so to speak, had a horrible time with it. He didn't want to do it, and it was like pushing a bowling ball up a hill all the time. Behaviorally, he wasn't wired to do those things. He got very bored of those things. He got very disillusioned with those things. Yet when we figured out what plans worked for him, he was energized and passionate and had much more success.
You mentioned the four different kind of types or categories, and one of the tools that you develop in the book is what you call a BOSI process, B-O-S-I. Talk to us a bit more about that.
Yeah, so BOSI is just the acronym for the four DNAs. B stands for builder, O for opportunist, S for specialist, and I for innovator. And so that's where BOSI comes from. And really, each of those names or titles are fairly descriptive of who these people are. You know, like I mentioned, the specialists are the people who develop a lifelong learning, a skill, expertise based on apprenticeship or learning or schooling. And then they go into the marketplace to offer that skill or product to the marketplace. And they have a very specific set of behaviors and strengths and weaknesses. Opportunists are very different than specialists. They're almost polar opposites of each other. They don't really go into business based on a skill or something like that. They just go into business to make as much money as fast as possible. So for them, no one industry matters. One day they could be in technology, and the next be in real estate, and the next day they could be doing something completely different. For them, business is just a vehicle to get to their ultimate goal. It's not a career. It's not a life mission, so to speak. Mm. Innovators are the mad scientist types, the ones who are tinkering in their garage or, you know, playing in the back room kind of with their lab coat on, so to speak, inventing, creating, and in many cases are the accidental entrepreneurs. They were doing something they loved, and whammo, the invention, the discovery, the aha moment happens, and they're almost forced into entrepreneurship. And they have such a high capacity for innovation and product development, but a very low capacity to operate a business. And so with them, they've got a set of wonderful strengths, but also a set of known weaknesses. the builder DNA is their opposite. Builders are people who don't necessarily have any great intellectual property or even any great big business, big product ideas. They are just people who are wired to take things and scale them very, very quickly. They're typically serial entrepreneurs. They very early in their schooling or even as kids, they were starting businesses and selling things and bartering things very successfully. They tend to have a Pied Piper-like demeanor and can get people to do things that they normally couldn't do. And they tend to build these very large, scalable entities. So in a best-case scenario, these opposites complement each other very well in business and in business partnerships. So that's the BOSI framework. It's a quadrant where the B and the O sit at the top and the S and the I sit below it. The S and the O are opposites of each other. The B and the I are opposites of each other.
Okay. So you've got like a 2x2 matrix with BO at the top and then SI at the bottom.
That's correct, yes.
Okay. And so how should entrepreneurs think about this framework? How should they use it? I mean, is it about trying to identify your individual DNA and then looking at your business through that lens? Or is it about looking at your whole team and seeing where the different kind of matches are? How would you advise people to think about this framework?
Yeah, I'll tell you, Paul, what my intent was, and then I'll tell you what marketplace actually did. So my intent was that an entrepreneur would, for certainly, step one is know thyself, right? Go through the assessment process, discover who you are. And my intent was that based on that, then you would look at your strategic plan, your business plan, and make those adjustments to build your business better. And that's kind of how I approached the book. But turns out that the marketplace took it a little differently. Everyone still did step one, and everyone loves step one, which is the free BOSI assessment to discover themselves. But what I find is very quickly, as soon as they've discovered themselves, they go more down the people path than the strategy path. And there's still a lot of insight in the book about people, but I noticed, kind of like you said, the first thing they want to do is, okay, well, I want to have my co-founder take the assessment or my key employees or my staff, or I'm thinking about hiring a VP of sales. What profile should they be? So we're noticing a much more of a human capital push based on BOSI. And I think that's fantastic because we are seeing a lot of aha moments happen in that where, again, just because someone has a great resume or did a really good job at company X doesn't necessarily mean that when they come to work for you, it's going to be a fantastic business relationship. How you're wired and how they're wired has a lot to do with how the business relationship is going to go. Beyond just personality, it's if you're the business owner, you've built a certain DNA into your company of its business model, how it's going to operate, how it's going to interact with customers, how it's going to market itself, how it's going to message itself. And if you bring someone in with a very different DNA than you, they're going to want to market and message and deliver a product in a very different way. And that's where I see a lot of issues happening. It's not so much personality of I like red and you like blue. It's literally how I run my business is not how you want me to run my business, and that leads to a lot of issues. So entrepreneurial DNA and this whole BOSI framework isn't looking at personality so much. Maybe 10% of it is personality. 90% of it is how you operate your business and how you are wired to operate a business, which then tells you the type of people that can better complement you in that business.
Okay. So, I mean, some of our listeners will be familiar with other tools like Myers-Briggs, which is a kind of, I guess, more of a personality assessment, isn't it? Talking about whether you're naturally more of a kind of, you rely on sense versus intuition, or you rely on judgment versus perception and other axes like that. Or something like DISC, which is, I think, more about kind of categorizing behaviors, whether you're more naturally kind of dominant or more kind of... the inspiring type. So this is specifically for entrepreneurs thinking about how they typically go about running their business. Is that fair?
Yeah, exactly right. If we sat the DISC profile and a Myers-Briggs and a BOSI next to each other, there would be a little bit of overlap. I would say maybe 10 or 15% overlap between the three where you'd see some commonalities. But I think each of them are looking at very different things. And you're right. Like, for example, one of the questions in our assessment, which is very indicative of most of the questions in the assessment, says, my ideal day in a business would be spent doing X. And then there's four options. And as the person selects the role that they're best suited for in a business, that's telling us their entrepreneurial DNA. So, yeah, so we're looking at more how a person operates in a business environment, and that's giving us and the entrepreneurs giving a flavor of that doesn't necessarily come out with other assessments. So in a best case scenario, a company would look at personality assessments just to know how people are wired that way, but then also a BOSSY assessment to see how they are entrepreneurially built, because I think that's a level of insight that becomes very valuable when decisions are being made.
And does this go some way to uncover whether entrepreneurs are sort of different in some way to people who naturally gravitate towards larger corporates or kind of public sector type roles?
No, the BOSSY assessment doesn't really look to say, are you an entrepreneur? I know there's a few other assessments in the works right now and a few other ventures, especially some universities here that are working on the whole, are you an entrepreneur? Mm. Or are you, why even be an entrepreneur? Ours assumes that there's an entrepreneur inside everyone. It's just a matter of, you know, which type of entrepreneur are you more wired with, which is one of the reasons we also developed kind of the corporate entrepreneur, the corporate intrapreneur version of our assessment, which is basically saying, look, even though you've gone into the corporate world, you're still flexing your entrepreneurial muscle every once in a while to climb that corporate ladder, to go out and sell and market and promote, to take risks, to lead. Those are entrepreneurial tendencies. So some flex it in a corporate environment and some flex it by starting a business or co-founding a business. I think it's that same core DNA that everyone has. It's just the question is which one of those primary DNAs are influencing your decisions today. One of the interesting things we learned, Paul, and I don't think I mentioned this to you, is that with BOSSY, we noticed that people actually morph. They change over time. So if you take the assessment today and you're showing builder profile, don't be surprised if 6 months from now or 2 years from now, as a different chapter in your entrepreneurial life flips, that you don't morph. I was a very strong opportunist builder and morphed into innovator profile when I discovered BOSSY. It kind of drove me into the lab of my business. And when I look at the decisions I'm making now and the way I'm operating my business, it's very much like an I would versus how I used to. So that's another interesting nuance of BOSSY. And one of the reasons we made the assessment free is so that the entrepreneur doesn't have a barrier to come back and retake it when they sense that there's a new chapter in life. Because as your profile changes, your behavior and your decision-making changes, and the people you need to surround yourself with changes as well.
We had, as a guest on this podcast, we had Eric Ries, founder of the Lean Startup movement a while back, and he talked about entrepreneurship being really a kind of a frame of mind. It's really anyone who's doing something new in circumstances of great uncertainty, and that can be in a it can be as a sole trader, or it can be as a small startup, or it can be, as part of a large corporation as well. So it sounds like you're kind of on very similar lines there.
Yeah, I believe that wholeheartedly, especially after having done the research and talked to people in corporate America and in entrepreneurship. There's definitely some commonalities. It's just some choose to apply it in one arena versus the other.
A lot of our listeners, of course, will know us for our work in the crowdfunding sector. And you have some thoughts on how this could be used in crowdfunding as well?
Yeah, I think, crowdfunding is a lot about looking at an entrepreneur and their idea and getting excited about it and saying, hey, look, I want to be a small part of that. I believe that as crowdfunding gains more and more traction, I think it's not only is it here to stay, it's going to be the way companies fund themselves. I think it's going to be interesting for entrepreneurs who are going out for crowdfunding to be able to say, hey, look, I'm an innovator builder. I'm a specialist opportunist, and here's my idea, or here's my product. And for the investors or the crowdfunders to be able to see that individual's profile and instantly know a lot more about them. Crowdfunding is a lot about a relationship, and in many cases it's, look, I'm probably never going to meet this entrepreneur ever. But to just be able to look at their profile and instantly know something about them, I think will give crowdfunders a lot more confidence. And I think for those who become professional crowdfunders, a lot of investors are almost sitting there watching and putting, a few thousand into several different deals. They'll start to see a profile of entrepreneur that they're best suited for. I know that some investors are better suited to work with strong innovator DNA because they complement them well. They like those types of products. Well, now a profile can tell you if they have it or not. Some entrepreneurs, some investors like to work with people with builder or opportunist DNA because as they start to see the trends, they'll say, oh my gosh, my profile of investee is definitely opportunist builder, and here's why. So I think it just becomes, I hope it'll become part of the language of crowdfunding to better connect investors or funders and fundees over time.
And kind of co-founding teams as well, of course. I mean, you can think about these crowdfunding platforms just being as a kind of source of all sorts of data on the business itself and the founding team. And if you want to get involved in those businesses, then knowing more about the founder's way of working is going to be really interesting as well.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons we've integrated with platforms. So we've taken our technology and integrated it into platforms like Co-Founders Lab, where they're a co-founder matching service, and knowing each other's DNA is allowing better co-founder matches to happen. So that's my goal, is someday, for just like co-founders are being matched today based on entrepreneurial DNA, for investors and lenders and financiers to be matched to their funding sources better based on DNA, because that's something I've definitely seen. We've been part of millions of dollars of money raised and invested here and there over my accelerator days, and there's definitely a matching algorithm that we used in our own brains, not software, but just human matching that we did, and I believe that technology can start to do that now even better.
How seriously should we kind of think about this DNA analogy? Is this a scientific claim you're making, that that it's physically the way we're built in some way, or is it really just a useful analogy?
Yeah, it's definitely a useful analogy. I was a bio major in college, and so the analogy of DNA is all I'm trying to pull together here. It's just the fact that we're wired a certain way, and that predicts, so to speak. The predictive side of DNA is the one I really wanted to key in on, is that if I know that you're a builder opportunist, I can almost lay out a predictive set of – I can almost predict what issues you're going to run into, what strengths you're going to have, what weaknesses you're going to have, where you're probably going to best get your funding, what marketing plans will best work for you. So for business advisors, business coaches, knowing someone's DNA really helps them better serve them. So that's the DNA part has more to do with the predictive side. If you had a DNA test, you could say you're predisposed to cancer or you're predisposed for heart disease. That doesn't mean you have it today, but the tests show that there's a pretty good chance that you may have it. That's very much how Bossy works, is I can tell you what your predisposed traits will be and weaknesses and strengths.
And what do you think the future looks like if Bossy becomes a standard tool, across entrepreneurship?
In the small way that it's already impacted the ecosystem now, here's what I'm seeing and here's what I'm excited about as a tool for the future. It really creates a very interesting language. When I go speak at an event, or several technology platforms have implemented it now, several schools and incubators have done so as well. There becomes this common language when entrepreneurs are together, like, oh, you're a builder, oh, I'm a specialist. And it's almost as though they instantly know something about each other, and it opens up a whole new level of collaboration and connection. So my goal is for Bossy to just be a part of the language of entrepreneurship, where when entrepreneurs meet each other, when investors meet entrepreneurs, when entrepreneurs meet service providers, there's just this understanding of how we're wired and less risk in entering into relationships because we already know something about the other person. So that's where I want it to be, to fit in. At the end of the day, all it is it's a little filter that everyone installs in their brain that basically allows them to see people and strategy through the lens of their entrepreneurial DNA. And once someone understands it, whether it's because they read the book or watched the free video course we offer, it's not rocket science. We all intuitively have known this for a while. I've done is put a framework and four names around it. But it is interesting to see how energized people feel once they understand their profile and the profile of those around them. And that's what I want the whole world to experience at some point.
And just before we kind of wrap up, tell us a little bit about the entrepreneurship kind of ecosystem in Chicago. You said you were involved in an incubator there a while back. What is the scene like there at the moment?
Yeah, Chicago, especially downtown Chicago, has really blossomed entrepreneurially over the last 10 years. I think Groupon and Grubhub and several of the tech startups had a lot to do with it. And fortunately, some of those original founders reinvested back in the community. Today, downtown Chicago, there's several very well-known accelerators and incubators, including Accelerate Labs and 1871, which is a 20,000 square foot facility where companies incubate and collaborate together. And then out in the suburbs of Chicago, we've launched a couple of accelerators that kind of feed into that market. So yeah, I would say it's certainly no Silicon Valley, but it certainly is probably in the top 10 ecosystems in the country right now, as far as the collaboration between the colleges, government, the entrepreneurs, the big corporations. There's a handful of people who've really brought all those entities together to really work together, and I think that's really had a very positive impact on entrepreneurship in Chicago.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Great. So, and tell us how you can get hold of the book, and how can you how can people get in touch with you as well?
Yeah. So the book is the easiest way to get a hold of it is to Google it or go on Amazon. It's at Barnes and Noble. It's on Amazon. But you know, everyone's always looking for the best deal possible. So if you just Google entrepreneurial DNA, you'll probably find the best price out there. It's on Kindle and it's on Nook, and so it's really a matter of how people prefer to read nowadays. As far as getting a hold of me, Bossi DNA, which is BOSI, which is the acronym, and then DNA.com is our website where people can come and take the assessment. As a matter of fact, I'd recommend people don't come directly to Bossi DNA, but instead go to Bossi, BOSI.IN, which is our short URL, Bossi.IN/GrowVC. And that'll help us keep the whole crowdfunding GrowVC community together. And I'm sure maybe we could include that as a link somewhere,
sure,
Paul. But yeah, I'm an easy guy to get a hold of. I'm on LinkedIn. Joe@joeabraham.com is my email address. My Twitter handle is Bossi Founder. And Twitter is probably the funnest and the best way to stay in touch. So Bossi Founder on Twitter is the best way. Or if you want to drop me an email, joe@joeabraham.com.
Great. Well, we'll put all of that onto our blog as well. And so what's next for you? What's keeping you up at the moment as well?
It's kind of what you your last question, Paul. It's getting the message of Bossi out into the marketplace and getting as many people to drink the Kool-Aid as possible. That's it. It's just getting the word out, because in the few worlds it's touched already, I've seen the positive impact it's had. So my management team and my co-founders are pushing me out of the office saying, Joe, go beat the drum. We'll take care of the business. Just be out there in the marketplace and evangelize about this. So that's my job.
Great
that's
stuff.
My mission.
Well, happy to help out in a little way as well here.
All right. Oh, thank you very much.
Joe Abraham, thanks very much. Great to talk to you.
You too, Paul.
Okay, bye.